So why don't you introduce yourself, tell me who you are, where you're from, and where you were born?
My name is Xavier Oglesby. I'm 47 years old, and I'm from Raleigh County, West Virginia.
And you live in Huntington now?
I did live in Huntington, but I decided to move back to Beckley. I'm a corrections officer currently, and so it's easier for me to live closer to where I work.
Cool. Welcome back. And why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Doris Fields.
And where are you from?
Well, I'm originally from Kanawha County, Chesapeake, West Virginia is where I grew up, but I've been here in Beckley, West Virginia for about 15 years now.
And since we already sort of did a pretty long interview with you, why don't you talk a little bit about your experience singing, how you started, and what you're into now?
How did I start singing? Lord have mercy. Well, to be truthful, I started singing in my mother's kitchen. My mom, you know, she was a phenomenal cook. And so, you know, I have four other siblings. And my mother, my grandmother, and great-grandmother, they had a group that sang a cappella together at church. And so at some point, maybe when I was about 4 or 5 years old, my mother said, okay, y'all, we're going to sing. And so she got all of us together, all the kids together in the kitchen while she was cooking, and she, you know, asked us to sing different parts. And I don't know how we understood what she was talking about, but we did, and we just started singing. And I really didn't think much about being an artist or anything like that until I was 9 years old. I sang in the choir, but I always sang background. And my oldest brother, he had a song that he led in the choir. And it was called God Has Smiled on Me. Anyway, my brother had gotten to where he didn't want to go to church that much. And so this particular Sunday, he was supposed to have been there to sing, and he wasn't there. And the choir director looked at me and told me to sing, and I was really stunned. And I said, I can't sing that. And he said, yes, you can. And I was surprised. To when I opened my mouth to sing, it actually came out, and I've been in love with it ever since.
And so what have you been doing lately? What brought you to the apprenticeship?
Well, what I did, Doris and I, Lady D and I worked together at a professional theater company at Theater West Virginia. We worked there for a number of years. Doris played my wife in the show. And at some point, we would sing a cappella together, and we always got a standing ovation, and people just loved us, and we would get people from all over the country to come and see the shows. Anyway, then after that, she went a different direction. When we decided we weren't going to work at the theater anymore, she said she wanted to be, you know, go into music full time. And because I'm a more traditional kind of guy, I was raised to, you know, you get a traditional job and go to work. And so I didn't follow her there, but she continued to pull me to work with her. And we did the Black Nativity in Charleston with West Virginia State College. And it was a success. I think we ran it for how many days, Doris? Like 3 days?
It was over 2 weekends.
Yeah, it was. And it was packed every night. And it was phenomenal. And I went on to do a couple of shows with her and some other people that I met. And then I came back, and of course, I'm still working at the same time. I have always performed and sang at churches and, you know, all weddings and things like that. But, you know, still working my regular job and whatever. And then at some point, I decided that I wanted to, you know, work in some aspect of the arts rather than just doing gospel. And I talked to her about doing the Black Nativity at Christmas time. And so then I started to produce that. And she, of course, I was going to look to her to direct, because there's no other director but Doris. So that ran for a number of years. This year was the first year we hadn't done it in quite a while. And then, but we ended up with this, the apprenticeship program. And I can honestly tell you, I have learned a lot. I would have never put together, I think Doris was able to quantify for me, how that we as a people, especially blacks, we made an art form, we created an art form, just doing something that we just naturally do. And it just opened my eyes to quite a bit. I have learned a lot from this apprenticeship program.
Nice. So what part do you sing now? Do you sing lead ever since that?
Lead, yes. I mean, I just when you pulled the microphone out, that's why I made that joke. You know, I mean, I'm a microphone and a chord. It's something that goes along with it. You just naturally, some people they sing a little bit, and then some people just have a gift to sing, and that's something that I wake up doing every day. And if I couldn't sing something. You know, even where I work, I'm a corrections officer, and where I work at the jail, I sing to the inmates. And, they're always wanting to hear something. It's not always gospel. Sometimes it's country music. I love country music. And I've got this dream that's been, in the works for a long time. I've always wanted to sing country music. And I love country music. And so right now, working with this program that you've given us, and after with this project, I'm looking forward to more of this. I have been so enlightened, and Doris is a very good instructor.
What sort of country songs do they ask you to sing, or do you just pull them up?
Garth Brooks, he and Kenny Chesney. I like Toby Keith. Nicole Kidman's husband? Keith Urban. Some of his. I think some of his may be a little bit too rock and roll for me.
Yeah.
But the traditional, I love Patsy Cline. Crazy. I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. Ooh, I'm crazy. Crazy for feeling so blue. Oh, you can't beat that. She could. So, I love country music. And Garth Brooks is probably my favorite of all time. I mean, the dance, his dance album, was just crazy. I could go on forever about Garth Brooks.
What about gospel? What do you get requests for?
Gospel, I like more the traditional gospel. Mm-hmm. You can't do better than Amazing Grace, How Sweet the Sound. There are so many of the old standards that, we cover in this actual apprentice program. There are so many of the old standards that we cover, and it kind of flows into blues, and the gospel kind of flows in together. It comes from a feeling. If you're having a hard time today, it's just something that comes up from the soul. And so, I like contemporary gospel, but nothing moves me like a good old hymn. Nothing in the world.
So what have you been working on, repertoire, techniques? What's the basis?
Well, what we did was we decided after we had this program on last Sunday, then this coming in August, we're working on doing a program like that where we get different artists in and we do nothing but a cappella. No music. We may have a percussionist there, someone to do drums, but we want to do it in just straight a cappella. And because I think, and that's what I'm really interested in, I just started picking up, the piano, and I'm able to do pretty well with it, but I love vocals. I love voice. Mm-hmm. And if I can, because that's where I started, in my mom's kitchen. We didn't have guitars and all that stuff. But it just sounds beautiful to me. And so if I can stack voices and just, you know, and I think one of the greatest things for me is that it's amazing how you can get people who are gifted to sing, and you can sing, start a song that everybody knows, and people just automatically jump in there and start singing, and you know, it just sounds beautiful. Like, swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. You see? And it's amazing how people can do that. Not everybody can do that. Right. This is something that we pretty much as a people, as a whole, you know, not all of black people can sing. But, you know, generally when you go to a black church on Sunday morning, somebody's going to start singing something. And it just feels like, I don't know, it feels like heaven to me.
maybe this is for both of you. Could you talk a little bit about what you see being the gospel tradition in West Virginia, the black gospel tradition?
That's a good question.
Well, you mentioned Ethel Caffey Austin earlier, and to me, she's like the epitome of the black gospel tradition in West Virginia. But I grew up in the Baptist church, and there were several groups that made a big impact on me when I was little. And they were like superstars to me, like the Penn Family, the Gospel Family Affair. There's some others I can't think of the names now. A lot of those people are dead. Now they were older people that had family groups that would sing together. And they would, you know, of course you visited different churches. And I was in the youth choir, and we would visit different churches all around the state. And there was always a group of families, you know, that had a singing group. And so to me, I mean, I just thought that was really very cool. And like Xavier was saying, you know, you hear those, you don't hear those standard hymns anymore that they used to do back then, or the quartet style singing is what you heard last week is that's not as big as it used to be. So those kind of gatherings like last week have become fewer and fewer over the years, and people who even know how to carry those tunes. We were talking about like the younger people that you saw playing the drums and the instruments and things, they don't even know those old hymns anymore. So they're kind of feeling their way around because they're used to contemporary gospel and Kirk Franklin and people like that. So it's been, I think, unusually hard passing down those traditional hymns to this generation now who are, you know, getting inundated by gospel, hip hop, and that kind of thing. Not that that's not good, but at the same time, you don't want to forget those traditional hymns. And like he was saying, sometimes for what you're going through, only Amazing Grace is going to take care of it, you know? So, yeah, I think, you know, just like everywhere else, gospel's probably still heading into the future with a different sound here in West Virginia now. But you have a few people, you know, like him, his grandmother, and those people who are in the quartet conventions that will carry on that tradition. So hopefully younger people will sort of, you know, remember those tunes. They may not want to keep doing them, but at least if they can hear them. Like I said, sometimes it's just one of those old hymns that you need that day, and Kirk Franklin won't do.
And we do it differently here as well. Some of the, I was listening to a song in particular. I was watching there's a movie that comes on TV. It's called The Fighting Temptations. And they had Shirley Caesar there. She was singing this song called Daniel Saw the Stone. Well, we sing that at church too. In West Virginia, I've noticed that we sing the same songs as someone would sing in another state, but we may change the words up just a bit. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the song says, the traditional song was Daniel saw the stone. It was talking about Jesus. He saw the stone that was hewn out of the mountain. Daniel had a dream and about this stone that was hewn out of a mountain, and it went rolling down through the city of Babylon. And so this song goes on to say it was, tearing down the kingdoms of the world. Anyway, the song, actually, the words that they were singing on this movie was coming down to redeem a mighty world. It's, we have a different way in Appalachia of singing songs, and ours may be just a little different from where maybe somebody may sing it in Kentucky. They have a bluegrass, more of a bluegrass feel to it. It is way different in our churches, and I'm glad you asked that question.
Could you put your finger on what it is exactly? It's just different words, or is there a style that you could name?
I just think that where, you know, Kentucky, you were going to get more of a bluegrass. Mm-hmm. In West Virginia, you're going to get, I don't know, you get more of a country feel because you're, you know, this is, we're in the hills. Mm-hmm. And so you'll get more of a country feel with it. It's the same thing. It's just you're going to have a different spin on it.
Yeah.
Even from churches, different genres, like she's from the Baptist church, mm-hmm. and you know, she grew up in the Baptist church, and they sing it a certain way. They may sing Amazing Grace a certain way in the Baptist church. In the Holiness church where I grew up, they put a little bit more spin on it, and it's a little bit more rocking. So it just depends. I've actually attended snake handlers churches before, mm-hmm. where they take up serpents and things. My mm-hmm. pastor used to preach at. He had a lot of friends. And we would go there, and, you know, they have a different way of presenting the same songs that we would sing at church. And so it's amazing to experience the diversity and see that we're all worshiping the same God.
Mm-hmm. And what's the church that you go to?
I belong to the Church of the Living God. It's here in Beckley, off of, it's on Broadway Street. It's right off of Johnstown Road.
Okay. I think I may have gone by there once.
I went to the church. Oh, go ahead.
I think there's some kind of short here. Anyway, I was going to the church where the gospel
singaliers
sing.
Oh, but yeah, there was a holiness.
They sing in his church.
Okay.
Started singing in our church.
Okay, cool.
When they were little bitty kids.
Oh, yeah, they were cool. They had good stories.
Something that he was mentioning about, you know, the differences in. Stylistically, something that I was thinking, because I'm paying more attention now because of what we're doing, the song that his grandmother did last week, Glory, Glory, Hallelujah, that's something, the way she sings that to me is sort of indicative of West Virginia. Mm-hmm. Now, I've been in other states where they sing that a little bit differently, and it may not be a big thing to mm-hmm. some people, but whereas most people would sing glory, glory, hallelujah, since I laid my burdens down. Glory, glory, hallelujah, since I laid my burdens down. I feel better. You get a little bit of pause in there before you go to the next verse. Mm-hmm. But especially in the Pentecostal churches here in West Virginia and some Baptist churches too, they will come right in on the end of that. Like I said, it might not be perceptible to a lot of people, but if you're counting bars,
yeah.
like most white churches will do mm-hmm. when they're playing, they might be thrown by that
uh-huh.
because at the end of it, it will be, since I laid my burdens down, glory, glory. They go right into that, and some people that might throw, but that's something I've noticed that's very West Virginia about a lot of the hymns and things that
uh-huh.
they do here. So that was just, I just thought of that when yeah. You were asking that question.
Yeah, I love that song.
The families that you were talking about, were they recorded?
Not that I know of. Because if they were, I would have had one of the recordings. I don't think the Penn family ever recorded anything, or do you know? Or the Gospel Family Affair. Now, the Gospel Family Affair is Angie Richardson. Do you know her? She used to sing with, she's in Charleston. She used to sing with Ethel Caffey Austin, okay. and they traveled all over Europe. She usually would do the opening Star Spangled Banner for Multifest. She did that for years.
Okay.
But it was her family, her aunt and her sisters
mm-hmm.
and brother were the Gospel Family Affair.
Okay.
And so they don't sing together anymore.
Uh-huh.
But that's what I grew up on.
Yeah.
Was people like her.
Yeah, I wonder, I just don't know very much about the gospel tradition being documented here other than really Ethel Cathy Austin.
Yeah, I don't know that anything has, because everything sort of centers around Ethel.
Uh-huh.
Here in the state, and the Black Sacred Music Festival, when that started, you know, coming along, then it got quite a bit of publicity. But as far as individuals and groups that I grew up hearing, and they were stars, you know, here in West Virginia, everybody knew who they were. But as far as I know, there's nothing documented about them, which is a shame.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
I think nobody really thought that you know needed to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody was going to do it, it was probably somebody, you know, from the Black community. But
mm-hmm.
Like Xavier said, it's just something we do, so you know, we don't think about it as being something, you know, that needs to be archived, and you know, this is history. It's just, you just do this every Sunday, this is what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a great opportunity to shed some light, you know, on that, and leave some memories for people. You know, I'm hoping that we can get some people, oh, I remember that, you know, that kind of thing, because that was, you know, last Sunday, a lot of those songs I was hearing were songs that I grew up with and I haven't heard in years, because I'm not a regular churchgoer now. So
yeah, do you think it would be worthwhile to go to a few of those conventions? Do they happen quarterly?
Yeah, well, like he was saying, another one is coming up in August, so we're going to take
at
a small
church
segment of that to do nothing but a cappella.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I could go and interview, or
that
I could come
great.
And you could use my recorder and you could interview folks.
I would actually like for you, because you ask some really, really interesting questions, and there are actually people who actually belong to the convention, the singing convention, they have their own history. And I would love to have you, you know, they have sung in groups and have traveled all over West Virginia. And I would love to have you do that.
Cool.
That would be fantastic.
And the Gospel Singaliers, I interviewed them a while back too. But
mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're singing much out anymore.
They, I think they still do. As a matter of fact, Robert Anderson is, not only did the singular start in our church, but Robert was actually the choir director that started me on, you know, being
cool.
a lead singer. It was him. And I really look up to him, and I think a lot of him today.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, if you would come and do the would interview,
yeah.
I would actually ask him to be there for that.
Cool. Yeah. I interviewed him and Richard. Robert and Richard.
Yeah.
Singers, but yeah. Yeah, that'd be great.
Is it Richard or Randy?
I think it was Richard, older guy.
Oh, that, yeah. We call him Dale. I know who you're talking
okay.
about. Yeah. We're good friends. We meet on the river a lot.
Cool.
Fishing.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess one of the things that I notice is that people don't really recognize a West Virginia gospel tradition, and maybe because it hasn't been documented, it's hard to know where to point them to. Like, I point them to you and to Ethel,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't mean there isn't one. Yeah,
there are powerhouses that come from West Virginia, you know, and when you lean on me, well, you can't go anywhere in the world and not know that song.
Right.
And you know, if you I think that because, you know, you were looking at a pretty much impoverished area, not only that, but this guy that sings that song, he had to leave West Virginia to get where he was.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me wrong, back in the day, you know, when those artists, all those big groups and whatever, they were on the Chitlin circuit, they came through West Virginia.
What's the Chitlin circuit?
Ah.
You haven't heard of the Chitlin circuit.
Well, you see, back in the day when artists were aspiring to, you know, to be great, you know, you had to take jobs in faraway places. Ultimately, what happened was, because of Jim Crow and things like that, you had a lot of black artists that were wanting to be great, and you know, they had to get their music out there so people would know them. And so they had to go into a lot of these places in town, and you know, they may have to stay in somebody's house, mm-hmm. especially a place like West Virginia. Even Nat King Cole, you know, I was a lady that I take care of. She was telling me that when Nat King Cole came to Charleston, you know, he had to stay at Miss Hale's house, I think it was, or something like that. You know, they had certain places, and their club, the black clubs, mm-hmm. those people played at, as famous as Nat King Cole is, right. you see. Yeah. And so these guys, my great-grandparents had a place called the Dewdrop Inn, and it was down in This place was they had you could get girls there, you could gamble there, and they had live entertainment. And this was down in what called Eury, West Virginia. It's the nickname for it would be Cooktown.
Okay.
And so they owned this hotel down there.
What
and
county is that in?
That's still in Raleigh County.
Okay.
It's when you'll go down through Sophia to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Robert Byrd is from down in that neck of the woods.
Yeah, okay.
Anyhow, so they owned this place, and they would get people from the Chitlin' Circuit would come through. You would get Lloyd Price. You would get Ike and Tina Turner. You got Ray Charles before he became, you know, really famous, mm-hmm. and like that. And my grandmother, actually, in the movie, you will see where Ray Charles, it tells you that he would feel these women's arms and stuff. That's how he knew whether a woman was pretty or not. He made the mistake of running his hand up my grandmother's dress, and she slapped him. Down there in that hotel, those were her parents, which was my great-grandparents. They were the one that owned that place, wow. down there. And so those people came through there, and on that Chitlin' Circuit, I mean, you would get all of the best acts that ever was. Same way was in church. You know, these church acts, I mean, good Lord. You got to hear everything. And on Sunday morning in the Pentecostal church, you might be in church till 2 or 3 o'clock in the evening, you know, from Sunday morning service.
Wow.
They were playing guitars and drums and the piano and the organ and all that, and you heard just about every genre of music that there was.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason that you know, you don't get more of this stuff recorded and whatever is because most people were poor. They didn't have the money to get that done.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you wanted to be great and you wanted to make it in the business, you had to move out of West Virginia,
yeah.
or go someplace else to get it done.
Mm-hmm. And the Chitlin' Circuit, did that go up north too?
It was like everywhere.
Okay.
Everywhere that you had black folks, you had the Chitlin' Circuit. You had, they would go all down south, and it wasn't uncommon, you know, to go down south someplace or you had to drive for miles just to get to a bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Or you had,
yeah.
to go behind a tree because you wasn't welcome in the facilities that, you know, white folks could go through the front door. We couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you went to a restaurant, you went to that restaurant, you had to go to the side door, get your dinner, and go eat on the bus or sit out under a tree and eat, you
mm-hmm.
see.
Yeah.
Duke Ellington actually talked about that. I was reading an article where Duke Ellington was talking about, you know, they were not able, and he's great, they weren't able to stay in hotels and whatever, and so they decided that every place that they would go, they would stay on a train. So they would put a couple of train cars there, and that's where they would stay. And he said, you know, if it was good enough for Abraham Lincoln, it's good enough for me. And they lived off of this train, and that's everywhere they went. They would have a couple of cars for he and his entourage.
That's what I talked about a little bit in the Bessie Smith show.
Uh-huh.
It's one of the reasons she bought her own railroad car. That made it a lot easier for her to travel down
yeah.
south, and they didn't have to worry about staying in somebody's house or finding a black-owned hotel or rooming house. Yeah. And the Chitlin' Circuit that you're talking about, part of that circuit, I mean, a lot of it is like, you know, certain promoters would come up with, it's basically booking a tour.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever acts they could put together and sending them to different towns. But there was one big promoter, the Theater Owners Booking Association. So check that out, Google
okay.
that.
Yeah.
That was, Bessie Smith was part of that. A lot of blues acts were part of that. It was the Theater Owners Booking Association, but the nickname that black performers had for it was Tough on Black Asses.
Okay, I didn't know that either.
And that was the Chitlin' Circuit. Because they would get booked into these small, you know, clubs or
I see.
juke joints, shacks, whatever.
And they get paid and they may
and they
not.
May not. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. A lot of times people got them in to sing and they would do a whole show and then when right before it was time for them to come off the stage or whatever, the guy with the money would take off and run. And they so they didn't get paid.
Yeah. You said that
you found a connection with Bessie Smith in West Virginia through Diamond Teeth Mary.
Yeah, she was her half sister. And
where was she born?
In Huntington.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So did Diamond Teeth Mary perform on the circuit as well?
I'm sure she did. Mm-hmm. A lot of the research that I did about Bessie, I always heard mention of Mary, but I didn't make that connection because they didn't play up on Mary at all. It was all about Bessie. But Mary's father, Mary's father was Bessie Smith's stepfather. Mary went on the road with Bessie Smith early, and she stayed on the road with her for years and years until she went out on her own. So she basically learned from Bessie.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
I know, like, in your apprenticeship application, you were talking about finding these commonalities between the gospel and the blues. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Because I don't want to, I want to say it right. Yeah. And gospel basically comes from the blues. I'm putting together a written package to present to at the end of this. And one of the things, I do something called Blues 101. I've gone around to different schools and talked about it in churches and civic organizations and things like that. But one of the things that, especially church people, they know Thomas Dorsey is considered to be the father of gospel music. What a lot of people don't know or want to accept now is that Thomas Dorsey was known as Georgia Tom and Texas Tom, and his wife was Ma Rainey's wardrobe mistress. Ma Rainey, of course, was Bessie Smith's mentor. And Thomas Dorsey, he wrote over 400 blues tunes, blues and jazz tunes. And his father, I believe, was a preacher. So he grew up in church, but he played blues and jazz. It wasn't until his first wife died, the one who was Ma Rainey's wardrobe mistress, when she died in childbirth, he wrote Precious Lord, Take My Hand, which was his biggest hit. And he sort of just went strictly into the church after that. And he was the one who basically coined the term gospel music because he took the beat from blues and put it behind religious music. And so that's where you get the hand clapping and the tambourines and all that in gospel music. So it's basically the same music. He's using all the same chord changes in the blues. We were talking about, there's one song that I use in Blues 101 called Take This Hammer, and it's a work song, which is basically a precursor to the blues. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a 12-bar blues.
Show you yours, and then I'll show her the way we do.
Take this hammer, carry it to the captain. Take this hammer, carry it to the captain. Take this hammer, carry it to the captain. Tell him I'm gone, tell him I'm gone.
Glory, glory,
glory, glory, hallelujah. Since I laid my burdens down. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Since I laid my burdens down. It's basically the same thing. So one is a blues work song, and the other one is a gospel song.
And this, the blues is, sometimes that gets carried over with John Henry. Like, this is the hammer that killed John Henry.
You get the thing about blues is
it's
yeah, and everybody, you know, adds verses or I mean, that was the reason for using Take This Hammer. What I usually do is I get kids to come up and line up, and they pretend that they're working on the railroad. So they're taking this hammer, and I'm showing them that they have to keep time. The reason for having a work song is to make the work go a little easier. But it was all about rhythm, too. You can't have somebody that doesn't have rhythm on, you know, working on the railroad track and swinging the hammer, because you got, you know, people on this side and people on this side. So if somebody swings at the wrong time, mm-hmm. somebody's going to get hit in the head with a hammer. So that was sort of a demonstration of how that worked and how work songs worked, and how once they finish working, because a lot of time these men who are working on the railroad or on chain gangs or whatever, they didn't get to go home, you know, for lunch and dinner and things like that. They didn't get the weekend off. They would go, you know, they may be out, you know, in the middle of nowhere working on a railroad. So they go and lay in tents, you know, in pallets on the ground. So even when they lay down after working, you know, 13, 14 hours a day, they may take that same work song and put some other words to it, because they're laying there with nothing to do. They can't do anything else. So they keep singing. So, you know, you got all kinds of verses that are interchangeable, just depending on how you feel at the time. And it's still the same song.
Blues comes into it, because, you know, where she was saying, she'd take this hammer, hand it to the captain. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, but in church, they take the same glory, glory. And glory, glory, hallelujah, since I laid my burdens down. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Since I laid my burdens down, I feel all right now. Feel all right now. Since I laid my, then they go on to say, I can treat my neighbor better. Since I laid my burdens down, the words are changed, because it's a basically different message. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
The blues maybe comes in and they're talking about, you know, my wife, my old lady, she done messed up on me. Mm-hmm. I called it with another man. Mm-hmm. They call it Stormy Monday, but Tuesday is just as bad. Wednesday is worse, and Thursday's oh so sad. It's the same thing.
Yeah. So there's also the floater verses in gospel too.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's just, so I was just reading this blues book about the Delta blues. And they were saying a lot of it's like how long the dancers want to dance. So you just like throw in verses longer.
Yeah.
And probably the same for gospel, like how much you're feeling it.
And it's not structured. There's no structure in that. You're exactly right. It's not structured. You know, if they show up to a dance and you at the juke joint and you playing and people they feeling the music, you know, you got to keep that thing going. Yeah. So, it is what it is. And it's the same thing. It's the same way in the black church. You know, if the people are really feeling the spirit and whatever in the music, you keep the music going as long as, you know, the spirit is moving. And that's the way it works. Same stuff.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, the other thing they were saying in there, they were talking about people who sing the blues on Saturday night and then go to church and sing gospel, and they were like, "Oh, I don't cross up. It's one way or the other."
Well, see, that's what we were talking. She and I was talking at the Black Sacred Music Festival. We were talking to Ethel Caffey about that, you know, because you know Ethel was from the Pentecostal church, just like I was, or am, and her father was a holiness preacher, and I'm a preacher's kid, and so they taught you in the holiness church. That you can't, you know, they say, well, you can't sing the blues on Sunday, on Saturday night, and then get up and sing gospel music, the Lord's music on Sunday morning. But the truth is, most everybody who was an artist, that's exactly what they were doing.
Right, yeah.
I posted a link on our website there for this particular project about Lou Rawls. You know, he and Sam Cooke, that's exactly. And the truth is, most of those artists, whether it was Sam Cooke, the greatest artist that you remember, all of them came out of the church.
Mm-hmm.
It was the same thing. They were doing the same thing. Lou Rawls was singing with a quartet, as was Sam Cooke singing with the gospel quartet. But at the same time, they were playing when Sam Cooke went over to doing rhythm and blues. Well, Lou Rawls was doing background, and if you listen, to his music. Now you can hear Lou Rawls because he has a very distinct baritone. You can hear him in the background singing. I mean, it's just clear. But he would never tell that until years later when he was very successful. Then that's when he told, look, this is what we were doing.
Yeah. And Aretha Franklin's.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Staple Singers. Yeah, absolutely.
So what is your hope for how the gospel tradition and blues tradition will continue in the state and in your churches and communities?
I think that with programs like this, I think that, and especially where you were talking about where, you know, nobody really recorded and was able to do that with what we're doing here in this state and have been doing for centuries. I think what more programs like this would actually, you know, spur that. We're living in a time now where, as we were talking at the Black Sacred Music Festival, you know, these kids are, everybody, when I was coming up, I'm almost 50. When I was coming up, everybody played some type of instrument and sung in some kind of group, and everybody went to church. That was just expected of you. And then we came to a time when we got to the late 70s, early 80s, where rap music came on the scene. So they went from singing it to saying it. And so it kind of did away with having to learn how to play an instrument and do it the old-fashioned way. Mm-hmm. And now I think it's going back to that. And I think with programs like what you have offered with this apprenticeship program, I think if we continue with that and you know, do more recordings and what have you, I think that it would just make it open, wide open, so that today's generation can see, you know, what it really sounds like. Because mm-hmm. I listen to a lot of this stuff that these kids are putting out now. Most of it sounds the same. Mm-hmm. If you showed up to a program and most of them are singing to, or, you know, lip syncing to some kind of recording in the background. But if you turned that music off and left them stand on the stage, many of them couldn't hold their own. Mm-hmm. But you take an old artist, you take somebody like Lionel Richie or somebody, they can rock the crowd with or without something behind them. Right, you know, just is what it is.
So are there young people,
you know, like the gospel singalier started when they were kids. Are there young kids doing that today?
They're starting back to do that, but it just wasn't as, like I say, but when rap music came on, it just kind of engulfed everything. Mm-hmm. And kids went that direction. Everybody wants to be a rapper at this point. You had people coming up with gospel rap and all that. Everybody wanted to be a rapper. And but now you're starting to see, like my nephew, he's a percussionist. He plays the drums for our church. And there are still, you know, people who work with in the studio and whatever, and they know that they have to have music in order to do what needs to be done. And so these kids, they will learn to play keyboard. Mm-hmm. The problem is, with what we do, you know, you couldn't go to a church or go to any program or anything like that and, you know, start singing a song. Everybody's going to know it, but you had a musician there, a piano player, they could automatically follow you. Mm-hmm. But the difference was that she was saying Sunday when we were down there, you know, I was singing a traditional, one of the standards for the Black church. And the guy gets on the piano and he starts to play, but, you know, he was basically feeling his way through it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't familiar to him. And I could tell, even though I was leading the song, I could tell that this guy was feeling, he was feeling his way mm-hmm. through that song.
What song was that?
God Has Smiled on Me.
Oh, you were just talking about that.
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, Lady D just posted she posted a video from me singing that. And we started the song off a cappella. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it sounded pretty to me a cappella. And I would have preferred that we were able to sing without the music, actually.
Yeah.
Because I think it sounds better. I love voice.
Yeah. Yeah, what about you? What do you think?
What's your hope for the continuation of the tradition?
Well, gospel, I don't think there's any problem. I think it'll do fine in West Virginia, and there's plenty of people that I know personally that are advancing gospel music here in the state. even though it's contemporary gospel mostly, but, you know, hopefully through, like he was saying, through programs like this, people will start to remember the old gospel, the standards again, and, you know, maybe go back to that every once in a while. But as far as blues is really sparse mm-hmm. here in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. There's not that many truly blues bands. You know, a lot of people, they want to put blues in the title of their band, but they're just playing rock and roll. Of course, the way I look at it, it's all the same because it all comes from the same source, but still you have genres, and people like it when you're true to that genre, and you don't have a lot of that here in West Virginia. I mean, I don't sing strictly blues, even though I've gotten, you know, the label as being a blues singer. I don't sing strictly blues. And the people who are doing strictly blues here in West Virginia are white bands. Mm-hmm. And
and we don't touch it. There are very few blacks that are there, even just not just in West Virginia. You know, it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a thing where, you know, and we talk about this all the time. Black people, we've created all this. We've created all this music. Mm-hmm. But we create something, and then we get tired of it, and we throw it away. And then white people pick it up and run with it. But at the same time, we still look at that as being old hat, like the old gospel standards. Oh, we don't want to do those anymore because now we got Kirk Franklin and Yolanda Adams, and all of a sudden we're going to do all those songs. We're going to make those the new standards. That's cool, but don't forget, you know, where all that came from. And it's the same, you know, with blues. And so you can't... Any blues show you go to is going to be 90% white people there, mm-hmm. because they're still into this, you know,
yeah.
and they're taking it over, appropriating, you know, and they're running with it.
Well, Europe saved. I mean, you know, when you know you had Muddy Waters and Little Walter and all these people like that. Europe, the European artists, Rolling Stones and all that, they were interested. That's how. Mm-hmm. The Rolling Stones got their name.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, when the blues stopped or ceased to be a big thing in America, mm-hmm. it was old hat, as she says. Well, then of course Europe picked it up, and that's how it's basically was it continued on was
yeah.
because of the Europeans.
Yeah,
that's exactly right.
And was there
a big blues tradition in West Virginia?
I don't know that there's been a big blues tradition, but somebody that you really should talk to is Hubert Jones. I don't know if you know him. They call him Rabbit.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of him.
Yeah, he knows the history of all black music in West Virginia.
Oh, cool.
From years and years back. He's told
is
me
he
about...
in Logan County?
No, he's in Charleston.
Charleston,
yeah. And he's told me about all the coal camp traditions and everything, and the people he used to play with, Count Basie and all these people that would come through Charleston, you know, because
mm-hmm.
they would play at the Municipal Auditorium, and then they couldn't, you know, go anywhere else. The black people couldn't see them at the Municipal Auditorium, so they would go and play in the different black clubs around Charleston
mm-hmm.
after that show. He said until 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, so the West Virginia musicians would get to play with these national artists like Count Basie and Duke Ellington and all
mm-hmm.
those people, Sarah Vaughan, all those people have come through Charleston.
Wow.
And so they've gotten, you know, they've learned certain licks, you know, he said, you know, from
mm-hmm.
these different artists. And so then they carried on, they teach it to somebody else, you know, here in the coal camp. And because that was a big thing, they would come through on the Chitlin circuit when the mines paid. So the coal miners would come out of the coal fields to Charleston or to Logan or to Huntington, wherever the big facility was, to have a concert. Yeah, they would come and they'd spend the whole weekend partying with all these big names and learning from them because they played music too. And
right.
so then you got those people going back home to Cabin Creek or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and they're throwing their house parties on the weekends and playing the same music. So... it's just sort of faded out
yeah.
now. So hopefully that will come back. But like I said, I think, you know, blues, when Nat Reese died, I
mm-hmm.
think blues kind of died in
right,
West Virginia.
Right, yeah.
And so, you know, I would love to see more people doing blues
mm-hmm.
here, more people of color
yeah.
doing blues and picking up that tradition.
Yeah, I also wonder about, you know,
some of the mining families that maybe moved then back south after the jobs went away. They went back to like the home place and took some of the traditions with them that they learned in coal camps.
I thought that was it, the movie Mate One.
Yeah, yeah.
The scene in there where, you know, everybody's sort of getting together from all over, you know, and they're combining the music talent. Yeah. Like my father, he worked in the coal mines for 50 years and he was from Alabama, and they came up during the time of the mine wars and things like that. So, I mean, nobody in my family was musical, but I thought about that, you know, when I would see that movie.
Totally. Yeah. Let's see. Well, I hope that I was thinking you should write a book about this. I'm serious. Or at least an essay.
I talked to Rabbit. I have lots of notes from him, and I actually got to interview him and Henry Womack. Henry Womack is dead now, but I think the first or maybe second festival that they had a station set up, oral history station. Oh, yeah. So I got to interview both of them. Cool. And Henry Womack was actually Bobby Womack's uncle. And he would drive them around when they were younger and with Sam Cooke. And they would drive because they started out singing gospel. Uh-huh. And he said he drove them all over the country because they were all underage, so he had to go with them. Yeah. So he gave me a lot of insight, you know, into what was happening. Mm-hmm. One of the things about that, Bobby Womack, I got to sing for him before he died. They honored him at the Marriott in Charleston. And I asked him why, when you Google Bobby Womack, it says he was born in Cleveland. He was born in North Fork in McDowell County.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so he said you couldn't say you were from West Virginia back then. That wouldn't get you a job.
Yeah.
So I asked him if you could make that change on Google, I would love to see it happen. He said, I don't know about that.
Someone's got to use a Wikipedia editor or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, you can't look around anywhere now and not see West Virginia in the news. West Virginia is all over everywhere now. I think probably it's because of our current president, but it's everybody's talking about West Virginia.
They know we're here now.
Yeah, yeah, they know we're here.
Yeah. For better or for worse.
What was I gonna say? Did he have family in Cleveland?
Yeah, they had some family in Cleveland, so they just decided they would say they were all from Cleveland. But yeah, their family is right there in Charleston and in McDowell County.
Huh. Yeah, he's still around. No, he's not.
He died a couple of years ago. Yeah.
But yeah, you should hear a website. I mean, yeah, you have the Facebook page. But yeah, this needs to be documented. You should be the one to do it, I think. Let me know if I can help.
Is there a grant for that?
Actually, I was thinking there is a fellowship. There is a fellowship. The Humanities Council.
Really?
I'll send it to you. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we should talk about it.
Okay.
Because I think that would be really important. Let's see. Is there anything else either of you would like to add?
Like I said, I've been very enlightened. And just some of the factoids that Doris, because she has done so much study in this area. And I'm amazed. I love music, and I love the blues. I love gospel, different genres. As a matter of fact, I don't really care that much for rap, some artists, but, you know, like I say, country music, you couldn't grow up in West Virginia without listening to country music. It just is. And so I've written, you know, a lot of country tunes and whatever, and I would like to get into that.
So country band is next for you?
I would think.
That'd be cool.
I would think. You know, I often think about it as, you know, the soul, the country music soul or something, because I love it. I love it, and you can't get any better than that. And this apprenticeship program has just been so much, it's done so much for me.
Good.
Very enlightening.
That's great. What are you? Anything else?
You know, I just want to keep doing what I do, and I want to keep making this a full-time job for me. Like he says, he's been working a full-time job, you know, for years since we met each other, and I've been trying to pull him, you know, over, you need to do this, you need, you know. And so, but he doesn't like to live on the edge like I do, you know, wondering if you can pay the rent every month. Right, right. But, you know, I'm at the age and the point now where I'm just, this is what I'll do until I die, and that's just all there is to it. I can't punch anybody else's time clock. Yeah. So I have to do the things that make me happy mm-hmm. now. So I'll just keep doing it.
Good. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is fun.